What's up, everyone? Thanks for downloading the Tour Junkies podcast with PGA Tour caddy Brett Swedberg, who caddies for Ryan Moore. We have a fun conversation with Brett, laid-back kind of dude. We did something we've never done in this episode. We didn't map out questions. We just sat back, shot the shit with Brett, and had a great time. We had a lot of laughs in this one. We talk about how he stole his wife at a wedding, how he landed his caddy gig, a bunch of stuff about Ryan Moore, his favorite tracks, the way he plays, all that kind of stuff. Using a dead fish as a ball marker, nearly shitting himself on the course, and and all kind of other fun stuff. It's a great time. We really enjoyed having Brett on. Hey, listen, if you enjoyed this episode or any other, give us an iTunes review. It would help us out a lot. We don't ask for it often. But go to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, write a little something about us. It helps the show pick up extra traction, extra listeners, which keeps us going and keeps us doing our thing. We would really appreciate it. It takes about 5 minutes, and if you've done it in the past but not in the last like 90 days, guess what? You can do it again, and it still counts. It would be a big help. So go to iTunes, leave us a review. We'd appreciate it. But for now, let's enjoy this fantastic interview with Brett Swedberg.
We're the Tour Junkies. We're the Tour Junkies. PGA Tour fanatics, golf addicts, podcast views, you gotta have it. Special guest, DFS, DB, and them long shot bets. From Augusta to Sawgrass, we got your picks, we got your stats. Catch a buzz, catch a lat, sip some rosé with Pat.
What's up, golf addicts? David Barnett here of the Tour Junkies. Pat Perry is alive and well, despite a pretty rough showing on our last podcast. Didn't know if he was going to survive that one or wake up the next day. Pat, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing fantastic. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember.
Exactly.
I thought it was a great podcast.
Exactly. We have a very special guest on the line, one that we've been trying to get for a few months now, I guess. I mean, it's not that he was dodging us, but it was just, you know, these guys are so busy and they're just in demand. And he is also the most handsome caddy on the PGA Tour, which I'm sure demands a lot, both when he's at home and, and all the modeling things that he has to do in there. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the caddy for Mr. Ryan Moore. His name is Brett Swedberg. Brett, welcome to the Tour Junkies podcast, buddy.
Thank you. Yes, we have had a bit of a cat and mouse game going on. It's just good to be here. I'm glad it worked out. I don't have much for any side gigs as far as modeling goes. I'm trying to get some more, but there's a lot better looking caddies out there than me. You've got Brandon
Name
Whitten,
one. Who? Polly,
Adam Scott caddy. John Lamonti, I think that's
never heard of her.
Oh, come on, man. We were paired together, I think, fourth round at the Shriners this year in Vegas. And I think I'm an average-looking guy. Ryan's a good-looking dude, great head of hair, good beard. And John and Adam step onto the first tee, and nothing. They're great. They've got everyone staring at them the whole day. So
Were y'all just walking, like, y'all were just walking down the fairway, and any ladies that were on the ropes could, like the pheromones coming off of you and him were just knocking them out? Were they just passing out on the ropes? Like, they've been hit with
a
golf ball?
The problem was they didn't even notice me. I mean, I'm a married guy, but, you know, it feels good when people appreciate you no matter what. If you're good looking, if you're good at something, but they look past me all the time. It's very unfortunate. But
I don't understand.
He's a little stronger. He's got his skin's a little bit better. And I'm probably around the same height, but he just, overall, and he wears a hat, kind of a flat bill hat, a little bit better.
See, I've been trying to tell Pat the flat bill's the way to go. He won't do it. He won't do it.
No, that doesn't work for me in my age group.
You got to have the right, you have to have the right head shape. I've tried it. I've kind of got a half flat bill, this kind of camo PXG hat that I wear all the time. Everyone kind of makes fun of me for wearing it all the time, but I feel like it fits me. I look a little bit younger, but I don't. I'm 38, but it kind of makes me look closer to 30. But I'm, not like in the 20s. So I'm rocking it most events. I think we need to see a picture of Pat in it.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
I'll do it. I'm just saying. I mean, I don't have. You just said proper head shape. I don't have proper head shape for flat bill hats.
Yeah.
Just
don't you guys place bets and do different things? I think I listened to one of your guys' podcasts this week. There's different bets that you have to play. So. Something about a flat bill hat needs to be wear it for like a week or something.
You know what, Brett? That's actually a great idea. We were just telling our listeners, we're going to start doing little one-on-one bets between me and Pat when we disagree, and we need people to give us ideas for the loser. And they need to be things that are, like, feasible. I mean, you wouldn't believe the shit these kids say we got to do if we, like jump in front of a car or something. But they need to be things that we could do. And one time I lost a bet to Pat, and I had to wear pleated pants for a whole day. Yeah. I wore them to work, and it was terrible because Pat wore pleated pants for a long time until he met me. So a flat bill would work out.
The Adam Scott look. I think he's wearing pleated pants.
Why is he? You know what? I saw that last year, but I haven't seen him wear it since. Have you seen him wear it like in 2020?
I think he wore them in the fall, but he can do whatever he wants to do. Good looking dude. He got millions of dollars.
True.
Good looking white. Like, he's setting a trend. He's bringing it back. It might come back this year. Who knows?
God.
Great news. What good news that we're getting from Brett. Right now.
All right. All right. We got to say this up front.
You're getting some trend setting from a guy that wore. I have these Link Sill pants that I had hemmed up a little bit, and they hemmed them a little bit too short, so I had to roll them up as capris the other day.
Yikes! So. What a look. That's not good for Link Sill on here. We're gonna have to bleep that name out. I don't want you to lose your deal.
Tough look. No. Their fault. It's the people that hemmed them. I didn't know their
name. Oh, yeah. All right. So
I've
before
got a
we
weird,
get.
I'm like a 33, 33. They just don't make sizes like that.
Yeah. You're one inch too long. You need a 33, 32.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to.
The one inch
drop
too long.
An inch.
Yeah. That's
yeah. That's my problem. I have the same problem. That's how I knew. I 1 inch too longs recognize 1 inch too longs.
Yeah. I get it. I
All right, so if you haven't already noticed, here's one thing I was going to tell you, Brett, before the show started, but I'm going to tell you now. So me and Pat have interviewed a bunch of caddies, a bunch of pros, and I want to say for every single one of them, we have done a lot of, like, work ahead of time, like listing out questions, all right?
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, but this is the first one in 5 years that we've not done that.
Well, it depends on the circumstance. So in this situation, yes, you are correct. Now, when we did the, which was, I thought, one of the greatest, and look, Brett, you don't have to live up to this. And this is actually how your name came up, but one of the greatest podcasts that we did, which was at the RSM Classic with Gina Benelli and Aaron Fleener and John Tillery, coach of several players on tour. They all came to the hotel where we were, and we did a podcast, and everything was just there was no, it was unscripted, and everything was fantastic. So that one, yeah, was the first time that was just totally unscripted. We had nothing to even go off of. But yeah, for as far as how we sit right now, yes, this is the first time ever.
But we did that on purpose.
Yeah, we did it on purpose.
Those three guys are. They're all pretty funny guys. They've got a lot of good stories. So you just kind of go wherever it goes.
Yeah, and, you know, we have honestly, Brett, I mean, this may be awkward for the listeners to hear, but honestly, as soon as we, you know, struck up a relationship with you via Instagram, we felt an immediate connection. And, it just feels right. You know what I mean? And so it felt like one of those shows that we just go, you know what, we're going to be vulnerable. And we're not going to be super scripted. We're not going to pull a list of questions and try to knock them out. We're just going to have a great conversation with our friend Brett, who we barely know, but we feel like we're brothers from another mother, except he's like 448, 11 times better looking than us. So
I appreciate
that's really what we're doing.
That. It's good. I think that's the way to do it. You really get to know somebody that way when it's not scripted. We're going to probably say some weird things, and we can – you
let's
know,
get weird.
We'll just see what happens. I don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen, but it's definitely reciprocated. The love is definitely reciprocated.
Thank you, man. And I appreciate you listening to our show. That's amazing. Your name did come up in that podcast that Pat mentioned. Gino told a story about you that was pretty funny. And he just, when the show was over, I think he was like, listen, you guys have to have Swedberg on the show at some point. And so that's how it all started. So really excited to finally make this happen. And, I think it'll be a good time.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Gino's really funny. Gino's got some great stories. I mean, I've only known Gino for like 8 months, and I feel like I'm best friends with him. He actually sent me a text the other day telling me how much he missed me. And I love him. He's a great caddy. He's average looking guy, but I love him dearly.
He is definitely an average looking guy. That's good. All right. Well, Brett, why don't you start off by just, you know, you're married, you got a few kids running around that you know of.
Yeah.
You're looping for Ryan Moore. You're living in Vegas, which is now the second in a row interview we've done with somebody living in Vegas, which just blows my mind. You're a pretty good golfer yourself, man. Born, you know, Minnesota guy, which actually, believe it or not, a lot of Minnesota people that do what we do and are like in our space and like the daily fantasy golf betting culture is very, it's full of like, you know, we're just two rednecks from Georgia. And then there's all these Minnesotans in there. So you're a pretty good golfer in your own right. Looks like you coached some college golf at Arizona Christian and Grand Canyon University. Is that right?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's Minnesota is kind of like, it's like redneck of the north. That's kind of how it is. You know, compared to Canadians, like, I guess Canadians are really nice. Most Minnesotans are nice. The Minnesota nice thing, but got a lot of people that hunt and fish and do that. So there, I think we can relate, you know, on a lot of levels.
Yeah. I don't hunt or fish. Pat fishes, but I don't.
Yeah. Well, big fisherman.
Tell us about, tell us about yourself, man. Tell us about like how you, yeah, you were a really good player. Then you started coaching, it seems like. And then you just recently, I mean, I don't know that we've talked to a caddy who's this new to the, you know, the game in terms of on the PGA Tour. Like you said, you've only been with Ryan for like 8 months. Just give us a little peek into how that whole transition went down and you got into that.
Okay. I'll give you a little background. So I grew up playing a lot of sports and, my dad graduated high school with Tom Lehman. So that's kind of why I got into golf. And, you know, it was kind of like, oh, I'm going to be the next Tom Lehman. And that was kind of in his prime, like, you know, mid to late 90s. I think he got to number one in the world for a second. And so I loved golf. I was pretty good at it, but big fish in a small pond. And I went to college with John Tillery. And that's kind of how you heard my name from him. Yeah. I went for a year.
Oh, yeah, he told us that.
I had no idea what I was doing. I was so young. I was 18 years old. I mean, small town kid from Minnesota going down to Georgia was just, it was different. It was a little culture shock.
That had to be pretty eye-opening for you.
So I call Coke, I call it Pop, and they're like, hey, grab me a Pop. Yeah, what are you talking about, Sweat Daddy? You know, it's a Coke. I'm like, well, grab me a Coke then. It's like, what do you want, a Coke or a Sprite? So I was confused. I'm still confused by that whole thing.
You sounded like John Tillery there when you did that too, by the way.
I tried to sound like him, yeah. So, yeah. But he made fun of me all the time, which was great. We had a really good friendship. You know, I had a couple other roommates down there that I've stayed in touch with a little bit. So, no, from there, went to University of Toledo, Ohio. I barely played there for like a year and a half. Some coaching changes, and I ended up back in Minnesota at St. Cloud State, which they're actually cutting their golf program, unfortunately. So, figured out, you know, I got back. I went to a Division II college where I could actually play. Won a bunch of times. I think I was an All-American. Actually, I don't think. I know that I was.
You were? Yep, I found that out.
A little bit. But, yes, and then I played professionally. I did all the mini-tour stuff, kind of like, you know, a lot of guys do. Had a cup of coffee on the Corn Ferry Tour when it was still a nationwide tour. I think I played 7 events, made a couple cuts. Was married at the time and a kid on the way and just couldn't handle it. It's tough. I don't know if I was good enough, mentally wasn't tough enough, and kind of fell into coaching because I had no idea what I was going to do. I was married, not making any money, actually losing money. And my wife was great. My wife, super supportive. But I'm like, I got to do something different. I had no idea what to do. I graduated college with a general studies degree. So it's not like I'm going to go make, you know, $500,000 a year. Like, what do you do with the general studies? Here's the cool thing, though. I can tell people I went for sports management. So I usually tell people sports management, but it was just general studies. So, but it's cool. Think about the broad career. You know, I can do so many different things with
extremely
that.
Extremely broad.
You can, yeah.
You could be a trash person. You could
literally, I could caddy.
Think about how good looking you have to be losing money caddying with a general studies degree and still get married.
I don't know what I definitely pulled the wool over her eyes. Here's how. So I met her. Do you have time for a quick story how I met her?
Of course.
Of course.
So I was in Arizona at the time. One of my best friends married her best friend from nursing school. I didn't know her. I was a groomsman. She was a bridesmaid. And Ooh. We walked the aisle together. And
Oof.
Yeah. The problem is she had a boyfriend at the time, which her friends kind of told me, like, hey, I don't think they should be together. You know, you'd maybe be a better option, which I don't know how it was a better option. I was making no money at the time playing mini tour golf. So the whole time I was trying to be funny and like try to make her laugh. And I'm telling everybody after a couple of beers, I'm telling everybody, I'm going to marry this girl. I'm going to marry this girl. And they're just like, all right, you're crazy. And so it comes down to like the time that they throw the flowers, bouquet of flowers. And she's like the only single girl there or the non-married girl there. And she catches the flowers in a baseball glove that her friend gave her. And so her boyfriend that's there, he grabs the baseball glove and he goes on the dance floor. And now it's just me and him on the dance floor. And everyone's like, you know, because my buddy is now, he has to throw the garter. And he looks at me, he's like, you have to catch this. I was like, no, I cannot ruin this guy's day or his life. And he throws it. He throws it. I jump in front of him. I catch it. And I put it on my head and I ran around the dance floor for a couple minutes.
Jeez, man.
So, yes, and apparently she was impressed. I have no idea how or why, but
it's an interesting mating ritual.
Seriously, yes. I told my friend, I said, hey, when they break up, call me. And they broke up 3 weeks ago, and he called me, and I stalked her on Facebook for a little while, and we talked on the phone, text, sent some messages, and we started dating a few months later.
That's pretty impressive, Swedberg.
Thank you.
Is she a Southern girl? Where's she from?
Southwest. She's from Sierra Vista, so it's kind of by Tucson. She grew up there, went to high school up in Phoenix. But here, the problem, not the problem, but I had won a tournament like in that summer of us kind of like dating or figuring stuff out. I won a tournament. I made $10,000 and she's thinking, oh my gosh, he played golf for 3 days, made $10,000. That's a pretty good paycheck. So that was cool, you duped her.
Mm.
So, and she's stuck. She's very loyal. She's very kind. She's way better than me. And she's 10 years now, 10 years in May.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome. That's a good story. That's a good story.
That is a good story. I like that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Feel good story.
So how did you go from coaching college golf to caddying?
Oh, okay. So coached 4 years at Arizona Christian University. I taught some golf on the side at Moon Valley Country Club and then Dove Valley Ranch. And I wanted to coach full time. That was kind of like I thought that was going to be it. I really liked it. I love coaching. You kind of mentor the guys, still be around golf. Got hired at Grand Canyon University, which was recently, it had been Division I. They were Division II for a long time. And so I did that. I was an assistant coach there for 3 years. Loved it. But I knew I wanted to be a head coach somewhere and just kind of like, I didn't know if it was ever going to happen. I was like, I got to start providing for my wife. She's been doing everything. And I don't know how. I mean, call it divine intervention, call it whatever you want. But a friend of mine, Derek Boland, called me kind of out of the blue last spring in April. And he's like, hey, would you ever consider caddying? I'm like, oh, maybe. I mean, depends on who it's for. He's like, well, you know, Ryan Moore is thinking about maybe doing something different. And whatever else, I was like, oh yeah, no, I'd consider it. You know, it'd be nice to meet him and talk to him and whatever else. So we actually played golf together. I think it was his brother's 40th birthday. We played golf together and just talked about life, talked about golf, kind of from his goals and my goals. And he, I actually flew out to Vegas. I hung out with his swing coach, who lives in Dallas, Troy Denton. He teaches out at Maryville. And we hung out for like 4 or 5 days and just kind of figured out if it might work. And he's like, hey, I'm playing the Memorial. Why don't you come loop for me? So I went out. I'd never caddied on the PGA Tour. I caddied at Whisper Rock for a couple of winters in Scottsdale and done that. But I mean, it's obviously totally different caddying on the PGA Tour. So I flew out to Ohio and caddied for him. And the funny thing is he shot 7 under in the first round and was leading the tournament.
that's incredible. You went straight from – you never caddied on the PGA Tour or any tour, just at a club.
Yeah.
And you went straight to the Memorial first round. I mean, that's intimidating.
It is. Oh yeah. I mean, I told him, I'm like, I don't want to fall in a bunker. I don't want to fall in a lake, and I certainly don't want to crap my pants. So it was, and I didn't do any of those. So it was a huge win. It didn't matter.
Big win.
You know, how we played. I did not fall in a bunker or fall in a lake or poop my pants. So, no, it was awesome. He's a great dude. I mean, it was, and that was kind of like the trial. I caddied for him for a couple of weeks just to kind of figure out if it was going to work. And, we hit it off and things were good. And so he offered me, you know, a full-time position and kind of a unique deal where, we practice together and hang out and, just kind of hold him accountable with some stuff. And yeah, it's been awesome. We moved out to Vegas in July from Arizona and yeah, it's been really cool.
That's a pretty rare deal, isn't it? Like from other caddies on tour.
I mean, honestly, you know, he's been out for, he's played 15 or 16 years. It's probably his 16th year. And he's similar. Like, we're basically the similar places in our lives. He's got three kids. And I think he was just looking to do something different. And I had some background in golf. I didn't obviously play at a super high level, but played moderately okay as a professional and then coached for 7 years. So I kind of had things, at least I understood golf and playing competitively. And I think he was just looking to shake things up. And it's definitely rare. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's a few other guys that do some similar things, but yeah, it's been really cool.
That's insane.
Brett, I really have a question. You know, as far as like golf is concerned with him, you know, it always seems like Ryan just sort of pops for me on certain courses. And you know, we get into the debate a lot between other golf touts or whatever, you know, pickers, as you may say, that, you know, with course history and things like that. But it just seems like there's certain courses that he fits better on. I mean, what's your opinion on that as far as like, you know, history and how it suits somebody's eye and things like that. And, you know, as opposed to, you know, just recent form and just different stats that somebody might look at, like what's your kind of opinion of that?
Every player is kind of unique. Obviously you've got bombers who have a significant advantage on 95% of the courses, but so he's, you know, average to shorter hitter, but he hits it super straight. So you got to find a golf course where you kind of got to work it around and hit some different golf shots. So there's definitely courses that he plays better on. And with history, like even maybe necessarily a course that, you know, statistically doesn't suit him. If he's had history there, you have good feelings, you have more confidence going into it. And yeah, so I mean, there's definitely courses. I mean, he's always played good at San Antonio. He's played well, you know, in his backyard at the Shriners. He's won that. He finished top 15 last year. And then actually this next run that we're going to go on, he's going to play Bay Hill. He's going to play Sawgrass and then Innisbrook. He's had some good finishes out there. He hits it straight and his approach, you know, to the green is really solid and doesn't make a ton of bogeys. So he just doesn't make a ton of mistakes. So yeah, no, there's definitely, there's some feelings and there's mojo and confidence and stuff, but there's, you know, certain courses that he's going to thrive on that are going to suit him better as far as, you know, hitting it straight with a rough up and maybe something that's not super long.
You mentioned the Shriners. We talk about this a good bit. Actually, this is pretty apropos for this week because we're at PGA National. We know how many players live down there and you got the Jupe life. Talk about home course advantage. I'm using quotation marks here. Like, because with the people we know on tour and caddies and things like that, it seems like there's, you know, there's usually you're on one side of the fence or the other. The home course is a good thing because you like the comfort. You like the fact that you're in your own bed. You like that you kind of avoid the regular circus maybe that is the week to week out of town. You're familiar with the course, whatever. But then you've got the other side that says, yeah, actually, I think I play worse when it's a home field event because I got demands and family and friends and, you know, responsibilities, whatever. How does that – I mean, obviously, Ryan's always played pretty good at the Shriners. Do you think – like, what are your thoughts on that? As also a really good golfer in your own right and knowing what you know, how do you think that that plays out?
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly, it is kind of a 50-50 thing. I don't know if there's necessarily like a right or wrong answer. So Ryan is, he's got family. He loves being around his family. He's at home, gets to sleep in his own bed. But then the golf course plays very similar. You know, TPC Summerlin plays similar, you know, leading up to the tournament, where maybe some of these other golf courses play different. And I've only been out there for 8 months, so I don't know exactly, you know, how these other, you know, some of these home courses play for these other guys. But for him, he's such a family guy that being around his family is great. It's a comfort thing. But then some other guys feel more pressure. But he typically plays better under pressure. I mean, he's been such a good player for such a long time that that doesn't really faze him anymore. So I think if you've been doing it a long time, you know, maybe some guys that are rookies or only a few years out might struggle with feeling that pressure. But he's experienced it for 16 years. So it's just a little bit different for like a veteran.
What are some of his, have you learned, like, what are some of his favorite courses on tour? I mean, you just mentioned San Antonio, Shriners, Bay Hill, Sawgrass.
Those are some of his favorites. He loves Mirrorfield Village. That'd be a course that he'd love to get. I mean, it's such an amazing tournament. The golf course is phenomenal. Really good field. That's a place that we'd really like to play well. And I mean, I say we, but he, I mean, I've only been here for 8 months, but I'm part of the team. I'd say, the Memorial would be huge. Travelers is a good place for him. It's a good golf course. And a lot of it comes down to a course that you feel like you can really play well on. You know, there's certain courses that are just going to be tougher. You go into a week and it's like, well, the course is 7,500 yards and it's wet, you know, it's like top 10 is a win, you know, to be honest, but there's a handful of courses that are like, hey, this is a place we can go get, you know, you're still going out and trying to shoot the best score that you can shoot. But at the end of the day, you're gonna have a better chance of being in contention. So yeah, San Antonio, you know, is definitely a place. Sawgrass would be great. Bay Hills, potentially has been in contention at Innisbrook and Valspar. So I don't know if there's one more than the other. Well, actually, no, I take that back. Yeah, I think Memorial would be one that would be big for him. He'd really like to win that one.
What, like, how far does Ryan hit his driver?
In Arizona in Vegas or at sea level?
I guess sea level.
It's sea level, yeah, sea level.
Okay. Well, at RIV, so we just played the Genesis a couple weeks ago. We were at RIV. I don't know. You'd have to go back and look the stats, but their fairways are running out a little bit. So he's hitting at 3+ out there. You know, on average that are a little bit more wet, he's probably hitting 285, 290, but out here in Vegas, it's always over 300 yards. It's just, but he's swinging really good right now too. He's creating a little bit more speed. So, you know, I'd say you got on average, he's probably just under 300 yards, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's deemed like a short hitter, but it's not like significantly shorter, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever asked this question to any caddy. What's his
– go for it.
I don't know why I'm even asking this. What is his
–
this isn't that sexy. We're going to get to that in a minute. What's his pre-round warm-up look like? Like, I'm not talking about – I don't want to hear about, like, him stretching and lifting weights and shit. But just, like,
okay,
on the range or practice, like – especially, I think, for people who are listening that play golf – and they go on the range. Yeah. Like, what's the difference between a range session before a round for a pro versus a schmuck like us? Not you, me and Pat.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Nice. No, I'm there right now. I'm still trying to find it on the range where you guys, I'm sure, are still trying to find it too. Ryan's not trying to find anything. He's just he's warming up and he hits it so good all the time. His club face control is better than 99.9% of people out there. So, he's literally just warming up, getting loose. So depending on where the putting green's at, if he's on hole 1 or 10, we'll go. We need probably, if it's cold, we need probably an hour. If it's warm, we need 45 minutes. We'll hit wedges. You know, he'll hit a 60 degree for a bit and just kind of work through the bag through driver. So we'll probably do 30 minutes of that. 5 to 10 minutes of chipping if the chipping green is in close proximity to the tee he's starting on, and then we'll putt for 5 to 10 minutes. Kind of, we just start with like 3 to 5 footers, just go around in a circle, just kind of feeling, you know, the speed of the greens, making sure we're starting online, and then he'll just putt some speed putts, 20 to 30 footers, and get a feel for that, and then we'll roll to the first tee. So it's pretty short and sweet. Like I said, he doesn't need to find anything, so he's just out there just getting loose, just warming up.
Hmm.
Yeah, pretty easy.
Yeah.
That's like way more simple than I thought it would be.
it really is.
He's very, I mean, he is simple. He doesn't have to do a whole lot. He's been doing it for so long. He kind of knows, you know, what gets him into his comfort zone. There's not a lot of changes going on. I mean, if there's anything that we need to work on, and we're doing it on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, if we're like trying out a different three wood or, you know, working on a different wedge, but come Thursday, if you need more than an hour to warm up, you know, I don't know if you're for sure quite ready.
Yeah. What do you do before a tournament? Like, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, what are you doing to prepare as his caddy?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't walk the course. He doesn't really want me to do that. He's seen every golf course 100 times. I'll probably give him too much. Yeah, it's awesome. It's great. So the more information I give him, probably the worse information it is. So, I'm out there. We'll typically get there on most of the time on a Tuesday. We'll play 9 holes on a Tuesday. This is all new to me. All these courses are. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm at least got the yardage book. I'm figuring out some hole locations, but he doesn't miss it very big very often, so it's not that tough. So he's, you know, he's telling me more stuff than I'm telling him. So and then we go play, we'll probably have a 9-hole pro-am on Wednesday. So for me, it's not that difficult. I mean, I'll watch some stuff on TV, maybe like on a if he has an afternoon tea time on a Thursday, I'll watch some stuff on TV or look at, you know, shot length just to see some hole locations and if guys are missing in some weird spots or if some big numbers are happening, just, you know, based, or if wind is confusing, I'll do that. But for the most part, he's got it all figured out. I'm there to carry the bag and make him smile.
If you, Brett, if you had to pick a major setup, as far as major tournaments that's best suited for Ryan, what would you pick? You know, a Masters. That's what I would think.
Yeah, 100%. He's played well there. I think, I mean, this was a long time ago. I'd have to look this up, but I probably in 2004, 5, or 6, when he was, I think he was low am out there, made the cut. I think he finished top 20. He would thrive there. And that's kind of our goal. Honestly, it's kind of funny because we talk about stuff. Obviously, I'm trying to help him, you know, do some great things over the next few years. And he's been gracious enough to hire me and so I can kind of take care of my wife and but we talk about it, like that's our goal is to get back to Augusta and it'd be fun. Obviously he's got to do some really good things to get there this year, but I think it's, you know, realistic for him to get there over the next few years. It'd be awesome to experience that, but he can definitely compete there. The other majors he can still compete at, he's got to play really good, you know, just like anybody else. He's got to do some really special things.
You talked about how you guys have an interesting setup where you said you practice together. So I haven't heard that a lot. And also, are you coaching him to some extent?
No, I'm not. I'm not coaching him. I'm kind of the middleman because Troy, his coach in Dallas, he flies into town probably once a month for a few days, hangs out. So no, it's honestly, it's like kind of a sparring partner. He just beats the crap out of me on the golf course. He just survives. Under, you know, I mean, the guy he crushes me. Like it's a great job and I love it, but I get beat every single time we go play and it's just demoralizing because I was an okay player at one time. But so when I got hired in the summer or no, I got hired in May and I moved out here in July and we started kind of practicing together and we'd go, we played more at, I guess, TPC Summer. Like, we go play Shadow Creek quite a bit now, especially, but we'll play TPC Summer leading up to the event. And I didn't, probably the first 60 rounds, like, I wasn't close to beating him. There was I'll tell you two funny stories. So we were playing at Shadow Creek one day, and like, I don't care. I mean, it'd be cool to beat him, but I'm not going to, like, tell all my buddies and put it on Instagram or something. But, you know, I'm still kind of competitive. I know that there's no chance I could ever beat him in a competitive round, but, and you know, just us two playing, it could happen. So we're playing at Shadow Creek. We're on the back nine. I'm actually playing pretty good. I think I'm 3 under for the day. We get to hole 16, which is a par 5. Both hit drives down the middle. no, actually he hit it in the fairway bunker. He laid up to like 90 yards. I rip a 3-wood up there just short of the green. And he holds out for eagle. And he was, I think he was 1 under at the time and I was 3 under. So he ties it up. I make par, crappy par, standard, you know, amateur golfer trying to make birdie and can't chip it inside of 10 feet. And so we get to 17, we both make par, and we go to 18, the par 5, and we both stripe driver. I hit, I think, 6 iron on the green. He hit 6 iron to like 15 feet. I got 30-footer. I 2-putt for birdie. He makes the 15-footer. Jeez. He goes eagle par eagle to snipe me by 1, which is pretty standard. And he played, that's like, you know, he played average, and I played great. And we go TPC Summerlin a few weeks later, and I actually putt good. I've got the half flinches. I putt with 17 different putting styles. today was the claw.
Today was the claw. So,
yeah, it was a split grip yesterday, a claw today. So we go to Summerlin, and we're playing, and he just kicks my butt all the time, and he kind of looks at me. I hit some squirrely shots. He kind of just looks at me like, dang, like, how does that happen? I'm like, I'm a caddy, man. And, like, I'm, like, on a heater. I think I'm 6 under through 13, and he's kind of just doing whatever. He's 3 under, still just hanging out, you know, not doing great. And he goes on and plays, like, the next, I don't even know, like, the next 5 holes and, like, 6 under par. And he shoots, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 under, and I think I shoot 7 under, and he snipes me again. So that's my day for you. I go play good golf and get beat all the time.
The best golfer out there in terms of the caddy world on the PGA Tour? Who's the best one you've seen, and where do you rank?
Honestly, I don't really. I mean, other than playing here, I like when I'm on the road. I don't play. I get injured. I'm getting old. I hurt my elbow and my hip. So I think. And I don't know, and I'm so new to this, so I don't really know all the guys out there, but I know Brian Branish. I mean, he played on the PGA Tour. I think, I'm not sure who he's caddying for now. And I don't know if he still plays, but he's probably got one of the better resumes, I would think. I don't know. Competition right now, I get the flinches with the putter. So depending on the golf course, I can maybe scrape out 72 or 73, which would, who knows? Gino is probably pretty good. I don't know. I haven't seen him play, but I think he's got a pretty good golf swing. Yeah. You guys might know better than me. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Gino's got a good golf swing. He can also sling a golf club very well. Like, it, like, makes a good sound and everything when he throws it.
When he throws it, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Really? Have you guys played with him?
No, but you should see. He posted a video on Twitter, and it is fantastic. Like, it's majestic.
Sound. I saw something on Instagram. He's got a really good punch out game. I saw that.
Yeah, he probably does. He probably does. Yeah, I was going to ask you, I want to do a little more golf questions, then we can get weird.
I'm ready. I'm kind of ready to get weird. So let's just.
Yeah, you sound like you're ready to get weird.
Yeah.
A lot of golf talk.
Well, Max Homa, he's our boy. He's everybody's boy. He's a good dude. He's been on the show. He just talked about how a couple weeks ago or a week or so ago, he talked about how he sucked at chipping for so long. And he found this one guy, I think it's Johnny Ho, who like helped him chipping. And he basically said like that was the one thing that he needed. So my question is like of what you see out there, like how many – like I guess everybody out there is either you've already got it all or you're that one – thing away. And if you're that one thing away, like what do you think that is for most players? And how do they find it? Is it the right coach? Is it the right what is it?
That's a good question. I don't know if it's the same for everybody. Cuz I mean, obviously at a smaller level, you know, I coach college golf and you see these guys that are good players, a few of them have a chance to play beyond you know, mini tour stuff, maybe every now and then you got a guy that can play on the PGA Tour. Or at least have a chance to get there. Gosh, that's a really good question. I think some of it is self-belief. I mean, all these guys hit it really good. I mean, they can tighten some things up a little bit, but a lot of it's like maturity as far as like making good decisions, how you're handling yourself off the golf course. You know, technique-wise, yeah, there can be a little bit here and there with some different tweaks, but they're there for a reason. They got there for a reason. So it's just going to take a little bit of time. And I mean, I don't know. I never got there. So I'm still trying to figure that out. I was mentally unstable and my short game kind of left me. So I hit it really good, hit 14, 15 greens around. But if you can't make putts inside of 8 feet consistently, you have zero chance of playing at a high level.
Mm. A short game.
What about you? What about you guys? Why are you guys not out there?
Mm. There's a lot of reasons for that.
Yeah.
I'd love to.
Yeah. I mean, I got a yip issue. I got
chipping or putting.
Or it's both. Putting. Like I'm using like a modified claw right now. A modified kind of claw like a grip. Yeah, you have like kind of a high. You have your left hand really high and your right hand low, but very far apart from each other. But in a claw type way.
You got the claw split grip. I should try that. I'm gonna try that tomorrow.
Little combo.
Yeah.
Jeez, Pat.
Here's what I did today. I had like some 30 footers that I missed by like 7 feet, but I made a couple comebackers. So at least I shot 2 over for 13 holes. I played pretty good, and Ryan was like 5 or 6 under. So I held my own.
You know, I think David and I, if we played more, like David plays more than I do, but we could be decent. We have talent, I think.
Yeah.
We have some natural talent when it comes to golf. It's just not all, you know, we got too much going on.
I think I have a good putting stroke. I have a good putting stroke.
Your putting stroke is good. Now you've got some issues with your swing.
I can't control the ball off the tee. That's my problem. I can't hit it. I can't hit it in the fairway.
Yeah. That'd be easy to fix. Just a few lessons, a couple days a week, and you really.
Yeah, apparently not. Apparently not, Brett. It's not easy. Apparently, I don't have anybody in Augusta that knows how to fix that shit. So I've been messing.
Oh, John Tillery is only probably an hour or two from you. I don't even know where.
He needs to answer our text messages.
Yeah. JT is an hour away. He's also coaching Ricky fucking Fowler and Kevin Kisner. He does not have time for me. Okay, I'm a head case.
Will you pay him? I bet you if you pay
100%, I would pay him. I would pay him in a second. I would pay him in a second.
JT's kind of big time these days, isn't he?
JT's a total big timer. He is.
He's
now I love him.
But he's such a fun dude to hang out with.
Do you have any good JT stories? Do you have any good JT stories?
He didn't do college. So here's JT. He went to class Monday through Thursday, went to practice, and went home every Friday. To hang out with his girlfriend, which is now his wife. That's the
Stop.
JT story, right?
That's yeah. No, total bullshit. The biggest bunch of bullshit I've ever heard.
What? I only went to college with him for a year, so this was him, you know, his freshman year. So things might have changed, but no, that's what he did. He drove his big truck around, and he did a lot of video work of his golf swing on the range. I'm all they're just hitting big swing hooks around, having.
All right, well, you know, one of the original stories he told us about you, and I need you to kind of you know, expound upon this story.
I can't believe you remember this.
Is using a fish as a ball marker. So I need you to go through, because JT told us this story, but that was from his mouth, not yours. So I need to learn a little bit more about you playing golf with a fish, a live fish, or maybe it was dead, I don't know, as a ball marker.
Yeah, that's 100% true. Honestly, I had barely remembered that until I had listened to it. So I, like I said earlier, I was a, you know, big fish in a small town up in Minnesota, down to Georgia. I was homesick. I had a girlfriend back home. Anytime I played bad, I just want to go home. I'm miserable, yada, yada, yada. Not exactly the most mentally tough guy in the world. And I enjoy people laughing at me, attention, you know, every now and then. And so we're on like hole 15 or 16. But the thing is, JT would always egg me on. He would always try to get me, because he was never doing anything weird. So we're walking out. Like, all right, I'm like probably 3 or 4 over shooting my standard 76 and trying to squeak in as a 5 guy into the lineup, you know. And so we were walking down this par 5, and I think he I probably hit it on the green in three, and I'm like, all right, what can I do that's funny? So I grabbed this fish from this pond, and it was, you know, it was still like, I feel like it had just recently died because it was still pretty soft.
So you didn't like use like some special northern skills to like capture this fish. Like it was actually dead.
I have no fishing skills. This is a dead fish that I just threw in my it may have been cargo pants. I would imagine I still wore cargo pants. Oh man,
cargo golf pants. That's electric.
Back in the day, I probably wore jeans when I played golf back in the day. So but yeah, no, I threw it in my pocket and, you know, straight face. I tried not to crack a smile and marked the ball. And I'd like to think the story went that I marked it, you know, cleaned it, put it down, put the fish bag in my pocket, and I drained my 15 footer for birdie. Odds are I three wiggled, but I think we should say the story that I made birdie.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, we need to stick with that story.
That's ridiculous.
Okay.
I've never heard anything like that.
No, I mean, JT, he didn't do anything. He thought I was crazy, this crazy northerner, you know, this Yankee that he'd always call me. So he didn't do anything.
Yeah, you and JT, that's an interesting pairing. I can't believe, though, that he was that lame in college.
Well, I don't know what his few years were like. I mean, he could have – I know. He was probably still pretty lame.
So. He only spent 1 year, David. I mean, let's just give it is a one-year sample size.
When JT's out there with one of his boys and you're at the same tournament, you guys hang out still, or what are you doing?
Yeah, he actually looks away. He doesn't want to make eye contact. He's being a slim
what?
For these players. He pretends like he doesn't know me. It hurts my feelings a little bit.
The hell, man?
Yeah, I know. No, I'm just like, I saw him actually. So I knew that he was teaching and coaching some guys out there. So I saw him, I think, out at Liberty National this last fall in the first round of playoffs, and gave him a big hug. I hadn't seen him in, man, at least 10 or 15 years. I think honestly, the last time I saw him is we saw each other at a national championship. He was, I think he maybe transferred to Georgia College or something like that. And I was up at St. Cloud State, Minnesota, and I saw him there and we gave each other a big hug. And actually, I think we even had a beer after the round. We snuck out of our hotel room and had a beer together after we had finished up our fourth round. And but no, I saw him. It was great. He was a good friend. I mean, it was only like 1 year, but we got to know each other really well. He just made fun of me all the time. And, you know, so no, he's great. I love him.
What does a college golf coach do?
Oh man, it's a lot. Gosh, it's a lot of recruiting. It's a lot of phone calls and a lot of text messages and a lot of, you know, just making sure your kids are going to class and making sure they're not going out too much. And, you know, I don't want to call it babysitting because that's not true. There's a few guys on every team that you kind of got to do that for, but man, you're just hoping that they don't. It's like raising like kids in high school and college of your own. You're just making sure they don't get into too much trouble.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
No, I was just gonna say, like, what do you think? Like, you're obviously a good player and everything, but like, what has been like the biggest adjustment? You know, being a caddy and things like that. Like, you know, where were some mistakes made that you never thought you would make? And like, you know, where were you nervous when you never thought you would be nervous? Like, yeah, what's that like?
As a caddy?
Yeah.
Well, it's different. I mean, as a college golf coach, you know, if your guys don't perform, it's all right. We got another tournament. It's not like they're all getting scholarship money. I'm getting paid. Like, obviously your results matter, but it's not like, you know, you're going to miss the, you know, the playoffs or the FedEx Cup playoffs or whatever. So I was nervous all the time. I would tell that to Ryan. I was like, I have to talk about it or else I'd be more nervous. I'd always be dropping scorecards on the first tee, you know, the one thing actually I never did, I haven't forgotten any water bottles. Like, you know, you always got to keep your guy hydrated, keep your towel wet. I've been pretty good about that. So I honestly make plenty of mistakes out there. I just, I know there's every player has got different pet peeves that you know, I played for a long time. There's just certain things that you just don't want to say to a guy. You don't want to give a player his putter when he doesn't know if he's actually on the green or off the green, which I'm sure I've done plenty of times. You know, at Riv, he hits a shot in the hole eight, his 17th hole, and it's a tough front right hole location, and there's a false front there. And I think it's a good shot, and I can't see. I'm kind of blind, too. And I didn't realize the ball was still moving and spinning off the green. I was like, hey, good shot. And he's like, yeah, wait a second. And it rolls like 40 yards off the green. He's like, just the next time, just wait till the ball stops. I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. Like, I can't believe I did that. I'm an actual kind of a golfer, and I said something stupid like that. But, you know, just you learn. You always got to be a step ahead, and you're just trying to make things easier for your player. Like, that's the biggest thing is I would need to be a step ahead with yardages, with wind, with whatever. And you want to make things easier for him. It's stressful being out there. I mean, you're playing for your job, your livelihood, you know, for everything. So, like, you're just trying to make it a little bit better, a little bit more enjoyable, and try to ease the tension a little bit.
You got any good stories for us, Brett? Like, I mean, you know, I know you've only been out there like 8 months. Like, any good caddy to caddy stories, caddy player, caddy fan stories? You know, we always enjoy good, you know, a good funny story. If you don't, no worries.
No, that's fair. Now, I don't have a ton of great like caddy stories. There's a story when I was at the Travelers. I nearly pooped my pants. Would you like to hear that story?
Yeah, of course.
Whoa. I mean. Yeah, no, I don't know what happened. I ate something that day. I don't know what it was, but we started on hole one, and I can feel something rumbling, and it's not good, and getting a little
sound
sweaty.
Like Gino right now. I feel like this is something Gino would be talking about.
This definitely would be a Gino story. Yeah, and I'm sure it's happened to him. I think he told me in the past that him and Joel's had to carry the bag like 5 or 6 times because Gino has had, he might have, I think he has had that. I don't know what it was, but I got to like hole 3 or 4 and I'm like, Ryan, I can't do anything. Like, you're going to have to get the yardages. I'm going to carry the bag and then we got to go. And he's like, all right, sounds good. And we get to hole 5 or 6 and he's like, hey, there's a porta potty right there. I'm like, it's like 10 feet from the tee box. So I was like, there's no chance I'm going to use that. I mean, there's some fans there. There's other players. I'm like, this is not going to come out super well. So we get to the fairway on hole 7 and I'm like, I can't. I'm like, here, we get there, hit the 6, another 6 iron, like 20 feet, pretty typical. And I hand him his putter and he sees some porta potties up by the tee box. I'm like, I gotta go. I run, put the bag down up at the tee box, run to the porta potty. There's nobody around. You know, it's like, okay, I don't like going to the bathroom in public. I don't know if a lot of people, I don't think anybody does.
No.
I sit down. It's, you know, 90 degrees. It's probably 120 degrees inside of this porta. And I'm like, oh, finally a little peace and quiet. And as I'm, you know, sitting down, there's 20 porta potties there. Someone decides to sit down right next to me. I mean, what are the odds of that?
Yeah, and, that sucks.
You know, I don't drop a yardage book in there. I, you know, pencils are good. I'm fine. So we're good. We go and get to the next tee box and he had 2 putted for par and we're all set. We were good to go. So
yeah,
I dropped a bullet there. That's a pretty, I would bet if you talk to every caddy out there, that's happened to them at least a few times.
Oh, that would just suck. That'd be the worst. I'm glad, yeah. Hopefully Ryan's understanding. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I could see a player being kind of a prick about that.
Yeah.
No, he kind of just laughed at me, which is great, which is, you know, it probably loosened him up a little bit more. So, no, he's so understanding. He's one of the best guys out there. So, no, I don't have like great stories because I've only been out there for a short period of time. And, you know, I'm not playing a bunch of golf with guys out there. I'm not, you know, going out and doing weird things. I do have a story of a couple stories of friends of mine that have caddied for me when I was, you know, trying to play like mini tour stuff in Q school. If you'd like to do those.
Yeah. Give me one good one on that.
Okay. So, friend of mine, we go to first stage Dayton Valley. I think it's near Carson City. And, we come back And we always, anytime, like I got through a couple times, anytime we got through, we'd stop in Vegas and hang out. And we got there one night and, you know, we were pretty tame, nothing too crazy, but we go on the strip, have a jungle juice, which, you know, it's like a 12% alcohol thing. And, you know, we slam one of those, like a 20 ounce of those. And so we're feeling pretty good hanging out and we're just walking around. And now there's like this outside karaoke bar. And so me and my buddy, yes, very strange. Mm. And so we very intrigued. We stop there and we start hanging out and whatever. And there's this black guy that we hung out with. And we decide to wrap back that ass up. And so we went for that for a few minutes and we did our thing. We did that and, you know, leave the karaoke bar and we go, we just go play a little blackjack. And I don't want to sound like stereotypical or whatever, but we meet this Asian guy and we play blackjack with this Asian guy for like 3 hours and end up going to like some Irish bar after that and singing and dancing and doing our thing with him. And you know, there's in my buddies meeting, you know, some cougars and whatever else. And so that was my one of my first experiences with Vegas was karaoke and a little bit of blackjack. Nice.
I think I know that Irish bar, by the way. What's your go-to? So you live in Vegas now. You've lived in Vegas for like what, 6 months now. What's your game? What do you like to play?
I have not played any blackjack. I have not done anything except I've snuck some, just some like, you know, slot, some like poker at the gas station.
What is wrong with you?
I know.
Why?
Well, I have had some gambling issues in the past. So,
okay.
I want to secure my marriage. I want to make sure that nothing weird happens.
Good
so
for you.
I used to
Good
play. I used to play a lot of online poker. I played a lot of online poker back. You know, the swings of winning $1,000 and $2,000 and losing $1,000 and $2,000 and So I've done that and it is very fun. I haven't done it since I moved here. I just need some friends to come out and meet me. Maybe you guys should come hang out.
Dude, I was just there like. Literally 2 weeks ago. I would have loved to. I've only been to Vegas twice. It's amazing. I did the online poker thing too. I didn't do it probably to the extent that you're talking about, but I was a big absolute poker guy. I was playing that a lot. But yeah, I mean, obviously that's a part of what we do. Have you, that's kind of a good lead in into like, I'm sure you probably haven't, but have you heard anybody talk about, maybe it's you and Ryan, maybe it's other caddies, maybe you haven't heard it at all. If you have, we can just edit this. But have you heard any talk about gambling coming, like now being legalized and like being a part of the everyday PGA Tour, you know, whether it's TV production or online production or whatever? Have you heard or thought about or heard other players talk about how that's going to impact things going forward?
Honestly, I have not. I haven't heard anything about. I mean, the only thing I've heard, you know, that some players have talked about is this new Premier Golf League that might happen, you know, outside of that, I've not heard of like the gambling stuff. No.
What have you heard about the Premier Golf League? What have you heard them say? Anything juicy or no?
Not like anything crazy. I mean, basically the only thing I've heard is they've got to get Tiger or Phil or Rory to do it. And it might, you know, then it has a chance to take off. But if they don't get one of the big guys, it's not going to really work.
So when you're like, you're an off week right now, are you watching golf when you're off?
I'll follow leaderboard. I'll watch a little bit this weekend. Cause I still love golf. I mean, I'm not a great player. I still enjoy being around it, but yeah, no, I'll watch it for sure. And see some guys that I know or some caddies that I'm friends with and see how they're doing and cheer for them a little bit. But yeah, no, I'm still kind of a golf junkie.
Man, I love it. What's your take on like golf coverage? That's a hot take right now. Like everybody's, you know, upset about
we need more players. We need different stuff. I mean, how cool is it going to be? Are you guys going to be at Sawgrass?
Yeah, we are.
Yes. I mean, I've just read some stuff. I don't know. You guys, I'm sure, know more than I do, but they're going to have like 300 plus cameras out there, and you can kind of pick who you want to follow. I think that will be the next big thing. It should be. I mean, there's guys that don't get a ton of coverage. And I mean, obviously there's the great players should get a lot of coverage, and they're exciting to watch, and they move the needle. But I mean, there's thousands of fans that want to watch certain players, and I think you should have the option to do that. So I think that will be pretty neat for the fan experience. You can watch whoever you want to watch. And I feel like over the next few years, that will have a pretty big impact, you know, on coverage over the next couple of years.
Yeah. Have you ever had, like, does the tour, how involved does the PGA Tour get with you guys as caddies? Like, do they dictate you much off the course?
No, I have not experienced anything. But like I said, I'm pretty new out there. If you talk to a guy that's been out there 15 to 20 years, I mean, they probably have maybe a little different view of that. But no, I haven't. I mean, basically, what I know is I can't gamble on golf, and which I don't. But I have not really talked to anyone really affiliated with the PGA Tour other than, you know, getting my credentials for tournaments and making sure I'm not wearing cut off jean shorts and a tank top, which is unfortunate because I think you guys would love that.
Love it, man. This is great stuff. We appreciate it, Brett. You were fantastic. We hope you and Ryan Moore have an incredible year out on the tour, and you keep slaying it, man. You just keep slaying it. Do you have any questions of us? Is there anything that, you know, your heart just has to know before you call it a night, or are we good?
Oh man. I feel like I don't know you guys that well. I feel like I've shared a few things, and
you've been vulnerable.
I'm a relational guy. I really thrive on relationships. I hug people quite a bit. I tell them I love them.
Oh, that's great.
I'd like to hug you when I see you. I'm not sure if we can make that happen. Maybe.
Okay. You talked about, tell us about your other personalities, your alter egos. What did you say before we started recording? You had your alter egos.
Oh yeah. No. So Brett is just kind of your normal guy, works a 9 to 5, you know,
good for him.
Gonna have a beer, grilling a cheeseburger, maybe a steak. Yeah. Bert is friends with everybody. He really is. He's kind of the life of the party, has a few beers, really enjoys life. Smiles a lot, gives a lot of
good
hugs.
For Bert.
Gets a little touch of feely, but no one's too worried about him. Now Brent, he's a real wild card. Brent hasn't been around in a while. He came out a little bit in Japan. We had some, you know, some weather delays. It was Typhoon Tuesday that we enjoyed out there. We've heard a little bit of the story. You know. We had, you know, 15 beers apiece, and, you know, we were stuck in the hotel. That's all we could do. So, no, you just never know with him. He hasn't been out in a while. He shouldn't be out.
Okay. It needs to be like, if they have to throw the JC in there, it needs to be like JC Brent, you know what I mean? Or even like JC Swed, you know, SWED.
That's half of my last. That would make
you got to do something, because it's not simple enough. You know what I mean?
It's hurting. Yeah. I'm making millions off of this, and I'm making nickel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, goodness. Thanks. What happened in Japan? Yeah. Cause I know, we heard a story about some lady telling Gino that he was ugly, and then she looked at you and said he needed to look more like you. I know that happened. What else happened?
That's a very no. Huh? So the thing was, just short of it, really. Like, I was sitting next to this younger Asian lady, and Gino, he had a hat off and doesn't have a lot of hair. And he kind of like unzipped his pullover, and I was like, "Ooh!" I was like, "Sexy!" And she goes, "Oh no, I'm not sexy." And I was like, "Oh really?" And I was like, "What about me?" "Oh yeah, very sexy." And so, I mean, somebody tells you that, how are you not going to play that up a little bit? So I went around the room. I pointed at Troy. Shit. I pointed at Derek. I pointed at Ryan. And so, like, they, I was like, no. So I had her rate everybody, and I was number one, which was really flattering. And so there, I think there was like nine people in the room, and she goes, there was nine people there, and she goes, oh, Gino, 11. So,
poor,
I mean, that
poor,
was
poor Gino.
There's nothing we could do. I mean, me and Ryan, swing coach Troy, we got stuck at the mall. We walked to the mall to, you know, eat at the food court, but it rained like 10 inches. We got stuck there as I think, you know, I think Tiger and I don't know who else got an escort back to the hotel. We walked through the rain and everything, and we just, we sat around. There was a ton of buffets that we ate, moderate food, mediocre food. We drank a lot of beers, and we hung out. We played a new a game called Monopoly Deal. We played a lot of that, which is if you play Monopoly Deal, just make sure the guy that's in charge doesn't make up rules. That's the big thing I'll tell you.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
So, yeah. We had Typhoon Tuesday and Typhoon Friday. That's what we had over there.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing. That poor Gino. You know what, though? But somehow he pulled Holly, which is insane.
I know. I've only seen a picture of Holly. I don't know. I haven't met her, but I would imagine that she's a little bit better looking.
Yeah, she's beautiful. She's fantastic. Gino's lucky guy. All right. We need to work on this promo code, Brett. We're going to change that. But for now, the promo code is what again? Because I can't remember shit. On Joint Caddy, if you need some CBD help.
Yes, get in there. JC Sweaty. JC SWEDDY.
Okay.
Get in there.
That gets,
roll on,
that gets
roll
you 20% off.
Yeah, roll on joint stuff. You can take it. Droppers help you with some sleep, help you with some anxiety. It works. Yeah. I was actually kind of skeptical. It actually works.
Fleener and Gino are going to be pissed at us for letting you really pump this up. So, we'll
right.
See.
I'm just here slanging some CBD. No big deal.
Slanging some CBD. Swedberg, we appreciate it, man. We've taken up enough of your time. This has been fantastic. We'd love to have you on again. I think we could have a great time. So we appreciate it, man. I hope you and Ryan have a fantastic season, especially getting geared up here for
Thank
this fall
you.
Swing. You got Bay Hill coming up, Sawgrass. It's going to be a good time. Thanks, man, for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We got to meet in person. We can do a group hug. We can do it individually, whatever you guys prefer. I'm pretty much into anything.
You're into anything, huh? Yeah, we'll definitely group hug it. No, I don't know. We'll play it out. We'll see how it feels in the moment. You know what I mean?
I think, honestly, once we make eye contact, we'll know what's right, and we'll go with it.